Hey, KFC Radio listeners, you can find every episode of KFC Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Man, a 6-inch flaccid dick is my dream. It's another edition of KFC Radio on the Barstool Sports Network. I think a good thing that has come about from all of this, I think when things get so bad, you stop with old bullshit. I think that's a sign of progress. I think that there's a little sign of hope. Like, I think the fact that Drew Brees was out here still completely misunderstanding what kneeling for the anthem meant. And I feel like everyone this time was just like, you fucking moron. There used to be like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to bring it up. I don't know if I want to say what I feel because I don't want to disrespect the troops, or it's a touchy subject, or this is about veterans. And it just, I think it like finally clicked for people. He wasn't disrespecting the flag. He meant that the flag doesn't stand for him and his people that way. And this was a sign of showing protest, and Nate Boyer, and he got permission and all that shit. And that's over. I think that's over. I don't think anybody like even tolerates that argument anymore. And I feel like the world coming down like a ton of bricks on Drew Brees was kind of a sign.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. The royal butt. I would go so far to say that what Drew Brees did, knowing how wrong he is, and knowing he has to have known that he was going to get crucified, destroyed, killed immediately, I'd go so far as to say it was brave.
Hero.
He was just, he blindly ran into a war that he has no business fighting, no knowledge about fighting, mm-hmm. and just, he ran like
and using like a musket, like using an old ass argument, like
that's what I was gonna say. Like you, like no equipment. Like he had like underpants on his head. That's all he was wearing. Those were his fatigues. Like he was like Doug Funny, Captain Underpants. He had a belt wrapped around his head, a pair of whitey tighties, and just went straight to the front lines, being like, "This is what I think," and it's wrong. I disagree with them. But it is to know you're gonna get killed and be like, I'm gonna fight this
but
fight.
You know what? Like, or is he still in like such a bubble, or like the people he talks to in his world are still like, yeah, man, like stand for the flag? That did he say that being like, oh boy, like his publicist or whoever had to be sitting on the side, like, oh, well, okay, I guess we're doing that. Or is it like, you know, yeah, man, we're with you on that.
I would be, you know, I'm sure what's going to happen is like, this will die down, this will dissipate, and then that voice will rise up again, the flag voice, right? So right now he's fighting that battle alone. I'm sure he's got plenty of splinter cells waiting for everything to die down so they can jump up with him again.
Yeah.
But like, his publicist must have been like, hey, dude, we're on Yahoo Finance. What the fuck
is that? What are you talking about? Why are you even bringing this the fuck up? Why are you bringing up anything? Like, Josh, shut the fuck up, Drew Brees. I mean, you got LeBron shitting on him. You got his own teammates being like, fuck this dude. But it's like, I think that All Lives Matter is kind of getting that treatment now. I think what people on the other side of these issues used to do was like scream and fight back. And now they're just like, you're fucking stupid. Like, if you say All Lives Matter, then you should think Black Lives Matter too. We're not disrespecting the flag. Just shut the fuck up. And you almost disarm it better than by fighting when you're just like, you people are fucking stupid, rather than fighting back, you know?
And here's the deal too. Here's the deal too. I will never again, this is a promise I'm making. I hope I keep it. Like, I never railed against new ideas. I never, because I always know that's a losing battle. But mm-hmm. I was always offended by them. Not offended is not the right word. I got defensive about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I offended is not right, but I got defensive. Whenever it's like something was like white privilege or whatever, I was like, hang on. Like, my life stuff too. And like, I just never took the time to understand what they mean. Mm-hmm. And I think, but it's like, it's just crazy to think that like we got defensive not we personally, because I always thought all lives matter was dumb on this one. But like, who got defensive about that? Like, Black right. Lives Matter, like, all lives matter. Why would you fight that fight? Well, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. If like, if all lives do matter, then you don't get defensive when someone says Black Lives Matter. If someone said White Lives Matter, you just go, yeah, you're right.
Right. Yeah. The offended is a strong term that I don't think everyone feels, but I do think just having that gut reaction of the but or the why or the hang on a second is, I think, finally kind of like for most people, starting to go away.
I think that's a very white problem to have. Like the ability to get defensive. Yeah. Where you're like, well, hang on, my life was tough too. Or, right. Well, hang on, I worked hard. And like everyone, or hang on, I'm not going to apologize for being born white. People love that one.
That's love that one. But those are the things I think that are like not getting the usual traction they do this time around with, you know, the people who like the extreme, of course, are still there. But I think if you say all lives matter, most people are like, yeah, you're not thinking that through at all. This idea of the flag, we talked a little bit about like being an escape was just like, I don't want to talk about this. Like, I'm afraid to talk about this. So I'm going to go back to being an escape.
That's my least favorite one in the world. And I think if you use that, first of all, I always hated it strictly because it's lame. Like, mm-hmm. I just think it's stupid. I'm not like, you're wrong and all that kind of thing. I just think it's a lame thing to say. Like, this mm-hmm. is my escape. You're in a baseball game, dude. Shut the fuck up. Right. Like you're this island getaway. You're in a baseball game. Relax.
Like when you walk into fucking City Field, you're like, oh, all of my problems are gone. I'm at a baseball game.
Dude, and second of all, it is the exact opposite of escape from the world. If you walk into a fucking baseball game or a football game, you're not escape. You're actually walking into a perfectly accurate microcosm of the world.
You're immersing yourself in the world.
You have celebrities on the field that are getting propped up on a pedestal. Mm. You have the ultra wealthy who have access to like the nicer foods, the nicer bathrooms up there. You have the fucking pretty rich who have the better seats. And then you have the guy who's working like 9 to 5 who's wondering if he can afford a hot dog up in the top stands. Mm-hmm. You're in the world. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, we have fucking military bombers flying over and recruiters at the front gate and like right. America everywhere. You're not escaping anything.
You're buying a $15 beer and a $9 hot dog. And, you know, yeah. It is America.
Welcome to military industrial complex. Welcome to communism. Consumerism. Like, yeah. Welcome to capitalism. Like, yeah. You're in the world, bro. You're not escaping fucking anywhere.
That's so don't pretend.
Or to your escape.
I've said the escape thing in the past, and what it more meant was like, I don't think this is my place to talk about something. I'm just here to crack jokes. I never thought that Barstool was, you know, an oasis in a desert of like badness. But I think that even that
Tyler
is
Tyler touched on Token CEO where he said he doesn't have an escape. If you have an escape, you're lucky. I still think it's bullshit. I still think you're just trying to convince your mind it's an escape. It's not at all. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, like, that's just something you get to do. That's not something everyone gets to do, have an escape. That's you're just – like, you're just you're luckily be continuing to be white. That's right. Your escape.
Or just, you know, it's not even necessarily race, but it's just, like, any problem that I don't want to touch upon, race, money, politics, whatever, I'm just going to say – I'm going to do something else and provide an escape. I think that you can still say I want to be humorous and all that shit, but I think the whole point is that our version of an excuse to not talk about it is we do humor, and the next guy's excuse is like, well, I work with kids or something. Like, everybody has their version of why they can't talk about this, and that's the goddamn problem, is that everybody finds a way to justify themselves not fucking talking about it, so nobody fucking talks about it.
And guess what? There's a fucking reason why all those bullshit escapes, they're not here right now. Mm-hmm. So now we have to have that awkward conversation.
Right. Maybe in a weird way, maybe this was fate. Maybe there's higher powers being like, we're going to make these motherfuckers talk about it when they can't just turn and say, yo, did you see LeBron's triple-double last night? Let's talk about that. Like, there's no, you can't escape. Everywhere you turn, there's some bad shit.
I don't think this is solely happening because we don't have sports and we don't have, you know, movies and shit like that. But it plays a part, absolutely, because exactly. there is no like, all right, well, at least the game's on tonight and I can pretend this isn't fucking happening down the street. I think it's a perfect storm. There's a lot of things happening at the right time to make this happen. But like, yeah, your fucking fake escape hatch not being here and my fucking fake escape hatch not being here is
now we're here. Now we're on the battlefield. Just keep talking. I'm also going to proclaim another thing dead. And I don't even really know what it fucking means, to be honest. Virtue signaling? I don't really get it. Like, the minute you start talking about, like, just being, like a good person, you're virtue signaling. Like, okay. I don't know.
Everything's virtue signaling. I'm just signaling a virtue you don't like. Everything right. I say, I'm signaling a virtue. I'm saying something I think. If you say something, you're virtue signaling. You just disagree with what I'm saying.
I think when there's other internet bullshit going on, like when people are white knighting, like I'm not white knighting for the Black Lives Matter. Like that, it has to be something so trivial that you shouldn't be puffing your chest out and saying, like, proclaiming these things, you know? But if you're talking, I can't even think of an example of some of the dumb shit. But when guys white knight for, like, a girl on the internet, when it's really not a big deal. And if you're virtue signaling, being like, you know, like, look at me, here's something I did today. When we're talking about, like, an entire societal, like, revolution, and I'm just like, oh, I'm on these guys' side because I think it's right. Stop virtue signaling. Okay, man, like, whatever. Like, this is where I'm just like, don't follow or don't listen or don't download anymore because we are just on different pages, different books, different everything.
I saw it happen with you today where people were like, well, like, that statue got vandalized. If you give a fuck about a statue, if you give a fuck about a Target pane glass window, like, in a perfect world, none of that shit happens. In a perfect world, all the shit that happened before doesn't happen.
Right.
Like that, I'm not going to forgive rioting and looting. Absolutely not. But we weren't listening before. The question is the same as it's always been. The request is the same as it's always been. Hey, can you just fucking listen to us and stop beating us and killing us? It's the same question. Just the way it's posed has been changed.
It's a matter of, you have to, like, be willing to let them do – like, I saw people getting mad about when they blocked traffic in my town on Sunday. Someone was like, oh, so now people are getting inconvenienced driving home. That's going to fix it. It's like, well, yeah, you have to let them block traffic or spray paint the fucking statue because you don't want the alternative, which is the looting and the rioting. Like, they have to do something that ruffles some feathers and disrupts a little bit. I think that – a statue getting defaced and traffic being stopped, it's probably your best fucking option. So shut up. Don't complain about that fucking too. And I genuinely do not care about a fucking monument getting spray painted. You could spray paint Abraham's Lincoln's fucking face. That affects me 0%. You spray paint the steps. I do not fucking care. And if you're going to extend your argument that far, fuck off.
I think anyone who cares about that is like, you're looking for a reason to disagree with things. And like, I just can't imagine actually getting that concerned about spray paint or a Target window or like, I don't know. It'll get fixed. It's not great. I know, but it'll get fixed.
I think they convince themselves, you know, they just want something to latch onto. It's like when the people told me, I can't wait for more information to come out about this video. And then it's like, here's more information that it only confirms what I was saying. Well, you know, let me pivot to this. But they spray painted a statue too. You know, it's like you're just going to keep grasping.
How about the guy yesterday who asked me, what's the solution then? I said, buddy, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the solution to racism, but I'll start with supporting those fighting the cause. Right. And he's like another guy just doesn't know what he's going to do. I'm like, I have no idea. I'm going to support with money. I'm going to support with my words, and I'm going to help where I can, and hope things get better. I hope someone smarter than me has a better plan. But I'm going to be honest with everybody right now. If solving racism falls to me, I am probably going to let you down.
We are fucked if that's the case. It's falling in the hands of much smarter and experienced people, and we still ain't getting anywhere. If you're going to leave it on KFC and Feidelberg, we might as well just pack it in and give it up like right now because. I will continue, you know, and if you're not gonna, let people spray paint, or I love nothing more than people putting themselves in a pretzel with like, there's a curfew, you must obey it. And it's like, motherfucker, 2 weeks ago you were telling people, you can't tell me when I have to be in my house. And I love the all lives matter, but 2 weeks ago you said, I don't give a fuck about your grandma and grandpa dying of corona. I want to go get my hair done. Watching these people put themselves in a hypocritical pretzel, it honestly makes me calm. I'm like, I don't even need to go on Pornhub. I'm just going to – I saw a tweet today that said, why are so many people talking about the number of like riot casualties? The flu kills more than that every year. I'm like, yes, give it to me. Let it go all over me. Fucking give me a facial of that shit right there. I love it. So, you know, if I understand that David Dorn being murdered and the cops who died, horrible. Never going to say otherwise. But then if you don't want that to happen, you got to let people spray paint statues. You got to let people disrupt traffic a little bit. And until that becomes a major problem, you should probably meet them. You're not even meeting them halfway. You're meeting them like 1% of the way, but just letting them fucking spray paint a statue. So I, in my mind, I would say all lives matter argument is dead. Kneeling for the flag argument is dead. Virtue signaling is dead. And hopefully we're all dead soon. There was another meteor that's supposed to be coming close.
Nope.
I need a new rule. And I understand the universe is literally infinite. So if you come within like hundreds of thousands of miles, it's considered buzzing the tower. I need it to be closer than the moon before you ever write another article about a meteor coming our way.
I don't ever want to hear about it again. The Earth is the boy who cried meteor. I don't care about it anymore. I'm fucking done with it.
You know what the Earth is?
It's like a monthly thing at this point. Like, yeah. Oh, there's a meteor coming close. There's a lot of meteors out there. I'm tired of getting my hopes up. Right?
Yeah, I said fingers crossed today, guys, and they were like, you mean that it misses us, right? I was like, yeah, right. And it misses us, bro.
Anyone who fucking hopes a meteor misses us hasn't been paying attention.
I feel like I just can't wait to die as long as everyone else dies with us. I don't want to die me, myself. I want everybody to die at the same time.
Okay.
But I got kids. If I don't have kids.
Hey, I'll tell you what. As a kid, I didn't like to share my treats. I'm keeping that shit to my...
That's my death. That's my death, man. You know what the Earth is? The Earth is...
No, it's all mine.
White privilege. Death belongs to me and only me. The Earth is that friend, that guy who's like cocky and like, you know, good with girls and makes money, but he's an asshole and he's kind of a douchebag. And everyone's like, one day you're going to get punched in the face, man. And it's like, nah, he's not. That's never going to happen. He's just going to keep winning. That's the Earth. It's like, you're ruining it. You're ruining the environment. We're going to get hit by meteors. There's going to be volcanoes. And the Earth just like, yeah, well, I keep on going, man. Do you remember growing up the hole in the ozone layer? What happened to that?
It's still there,
but so is the Earth. I'm not going to sit here. I'm not saying I'm like denying you that there's environmental problems. I'm just saying the Earth just keeps on finding a way. They just keep on keeping up.
Well, I mean that hole was pretty young, and he's just gotten older. The temperature keeps going up. The ice caps keep melting. I think that extra layer would have been pretty nice.
Let's see, hole in the ozone layer 2020. I feel like I was under the impression that I was going to be dead by like 18 because of the hole in the ozone layer. And how about the Amazon rainforest burning? Did that go out? I don't know. That was a problem before. Then Kobe died, and then the pandemic started, and then the riots started, and everyone was like, are the trees still on fire? Who knows?
Like 80% of Australia was on fire too.
I mean, I don't know whether it's a bad thing. I think it might be a good thing that it's like, boy, this place, this goddamn planet's like a fucking cockroach. Like, you can't get it. We're trying to get rid of this thing. We're trying to kill everybody. Apparently, it's not working. And I don't know what we got to do to make this planet end, but I think we should figure it out.
See, there are parts of me that are like, the Earth is like, guys, this is the grooming I do every year. You just didn't all tell each other about it last time.
Right.
Like, you know, that's like what I think one day we will look back, and I truly believe this. One day we will look back on social media and it will be like like fucking we look back on social media, like we looked at the fucking guys sitting on the Eiffel Tower or the Empire State Building. We're like, mm-hmm. You just let people do that? That's dangerous. Like they're gonna learn stuff about like what it does and like how the 24-hour news cycle affects. It's not a 24-hour news. How the 10-minute news cycle affects your brain. How people just saying whatever the fuck they want without any information partly, but any responsibility. I think like just like any all with complete anonymity on things. I think all of that one day they're gonna be like sociologists are gonna look back and be like this was the craziest experiment in the history of the world. Yeah. Like Australia was like, dude, you were on fire all the time. You guys just didn't tell everyone about it. And it was just fine. And it was just like the brush. I don't know this for a fact, right? But like the Amazon rainforest was like, yeah, dude, we burn all the time. That's just fucking what we do. We have too many goddamn trees here. It takes 7 years for a raindrop to hit the floor, whatever the fuck the stat is, right? Like there's like everything's gonna be like, yeah, like that was fine when it was a secret between friends and they told everyone and they had no idea what this environment's like and they all freaked out and like everything is just like everything is freak out now and it's gonna be we live in a world now where we have to tell people, hey, relax your shoulders for a second, see how good that feels, and you're like, whoa, I haven't done that since I was 12. You're right, I was a little tense.
Yeah, I feel like everybody is you when Hank was coming off the wall with the duct tape. Just like at any moment, I'm ready to punch, I'm ready to fight, I'm ready to go. We've got to be. I think that we're more unhealthy now than we were in like the year like 800 when there was like no running water and bad plumbing and all that shit. I'd rather deal with like the physical
paleo then.
Huh?
At least they were paleo then, though.
They were
cow's milk at least. Oh, does your mother say moo that you shouldn't drink milk?
Yo, speaking of animals, did you see that shit that I retweeted this morning? The girl who was saying, like, if we're going to do Black Lives Matter, that we should do Animal Lives Matter for veganism?
Yeah.
This reply tweet, which was, in fact, like dead ass serious. I sincerely mean it. I'm going to proclaim this, the most tone deaf thing of all time. The issue is exactly the same for animals and black lives. We need to treat animals like blacks and blacks like animals. Send tweet. Can't say that. Can't come out here and say, let's treat blacks like animals. Can't do it. Not allowed to do it. Can't even imagine that people still send those kind of tweets thinking it's a good idea. It's insanity, John. It's fucking nuts.
I don't even think that's called tone deaf. I don't know what it would be, but like, it's something bad.
It's bad. So, bottom line, world is fucked. Archaic arguments are dying. Pray for the meteor.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation. And take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
I will tell you what, I like that move out of Paint Your Life. Yeah. Hey, you know what? This only takes me about 5 minutes. I'll get to you in 3 weeks. I'm doing that with like students should do that with writing assignments. Like, yeah, this will take me about an hour. I'll turn it in a month.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Okay. Okay. Now it makes sense. I misread that. It takes 5 minutes to order. Like, you can get it done in 5 minutes.
Okay.
They said it in 3 weeks. I was like, what does that mean? So they're not speed painters. Okay. They can't paint a painting in 5 minutes. It's like, I don't know anything about art. That seems borderline impossible, but I've also seen those things online where they like scribble and they flip it over and it's a fucking elephant. And I'm like, what? That took like 25 seconds. So, forgive me, Paint Your Life. We'll give you the 3 weeks. Text KFC to 64,000 to get 20% off. What we got today? We got, Bill Burr. Bill Burr on the show promoting King of Staten Island, which I am going to declare the best like screener advanced thing that we've ever like promoted and pushed on the show. King of Staten Island is a fucking awesome movie. It's like Pete Davidson. Yeah, I mean,
I'll be shocked if I have a movie I like more than King of Staten Island this year.
I'm not a huge movie rewatcher, and I watched it twice when we had the screening. So definitely check it out.
Wait, you work twice?
Yeah.
Would you pause it before it finished or something? I had plans to watch it with three different people, and when I went back to rewatch it, I'd already finished it. So you must have paused it before it finished or something.
No. I mean, I guess so. Maybe. Why? Once you finish it, it disappears or some shit?
It was like your time has expired with it.
Oh.
I had plans to watch it with my girlfriend. I was going to watch it with my parents. It was – so I was just going to get it on Friday now. But yeah. It was like – it would have felt pretty cool to watch it with like John Feidelberg watermark.
Yeah, when we get our screeners, the watermark says our big fat fucking name right across the middle. It's like, yeah, you remember who got you this fucking movie. That's right. You owe me, motherfucker. So Bill Burr's on, and we did like an hour with him. So let's get into, we'll do Am I the Asshole in our voicemails before we get to Bill, because an hour with Bill Burr is always, I mean, it's sometimes it's crazy. I think out of everyone that we get and all the interviews we land now, I still think when Bill Burr comes through and he just genuinely likes talking to us and gives us like a full fucking hour, that still always hits like crazy to me. It's like, you know, it's Chappelle or Chris Rock was ever like, yeah, what's up, John? What's up, Kevin? Let's talk for a fucking hour. I can't believe it. And Bill actually...
I'm still also the most scared to talk to him, no matter how many times he comes on.
This was the first time I was a little calm, and I don't know whether it was because of the Zoom factor or if I'm finally just comfortable, but every other time I've talked to Bill, I've been mad nervous. And this time I was just like, what's up, Billy boy? How we doing? And I don't know why. I should have still been nervous. I should just shut my mouth, but... we got an hour coming up with him. Awesome interview. And definitely check out King of Staten Island. Let's get into Am I the Asshole?
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Am I the asshole if I tweet, we need to treat black people like animals? Yes. Yes, you fucking are. This is actually this one I want to lead off with. Is from Reddit Chips, not Am I the Asshole. But boy, do I love this girl. My boyfriend, 26 male... My boyfriend's cum took my tan off, and now I don't know what to do. This woman, I might have to hire her from Barstool, bro. So let me set the scene. I'm getting fucking railed as per. My boyfriend pulls out. What?
I think she already works for Barstool.
Does she? She barely does, though, bro. Barely. So I'm getting fucking railed as per. My boyfriend pulls out as he's about to finish and comes all over my stomach and boobs. Super hot. Nothing could go wrong, right? Well, earlier in the day, I had done my usual routine. Shaved, showered, put on some fake tan because I want to be a biscuit brown baby. Anyhow, now I have cum-shaped tan lines all over my stomach and boobs. I don't know what to do. It's so obvious. And it's so hot where we are. I cannot wear anything that covers those areas because it's just so warm. I don't know how to fix this. Do I reapply my tan and just have darker everything else? Would that even work? The tan lasts for 2 weeks. Help me. It's just, you know, why do bad things happen to good people, John? These are the hardships the world faces when cum's blasting off your fake tan.
Look, I don't understand how tan works, but like I feel like you just put more fucking tan on. Like, I don't even know.
Well,
like,
but no, here's the thing, man. Unless you're just going to sit there and just like fill in the dots on your tits. Yeah. I don't think it's that easy. I think it's more of a full application.
Dude, this sounds like one of those cheap things. I thought she was like, went to a spray tan. And at which point I would have been like, hey, you dumb idiot, you got to take a shower first. But the, With this,
no, no. If you get a spray tan, you got a shower, then you can have people come on you. That's the rule.
I've actually never gotten a spray tan.
You say that, like, yeah, no kidding. I think it's pretty rare for our demo, guys our age, to get a spray tan.
But like, I said it with such confidence because I just know that's what you do. But I've never gotten one. I know you're supposed to take a shower.
I mean, especially if you're going to get fucking railed as per, you got to know what's going on. So, you know, if you're going to be a biscuit brown baby, you might as well just reapply and go extra dark. Otherwise, people are going to know you had a bunch of cum on you, dude. What are you going to do?
Also, there's no shot in the world I'd ever think that's what happened. I'd be like, oh, she has that disease where like parts of her skin get lighter.
I would definitely be like, oh, you got vitiligo like Michael Jackson before I was like, right. Oh, you're taking loads to the fucking chest, aren't you?
There's never in a million years when I see someone with like splotches of lighter skin, I'd be like, that's probably semen. That's what that is.
Although, if I knew this girl and I know that she's the type of girl to put up a post about getting fucking railed as per, maybe I'd be like, oh, I mean, yeah, that's like Samantha. She gets covered in cum all the fucking time.
I don't think I would ever think that ever in my whole life.
If you saw on like a chick's lower back, like splotches of where, like you might.
I'd be surprised. I'd be like, oh, that's they have a birthmark.
Yeah, you're definitely overthinking it.
That's one of those things like you get in your own head about where you're just like, oh, this is like, I mean, I do it all the time with just pee in my pants. And I'm like, they definitely think this is pee. They rarely think it's pee unless I tell them. And don't get me wrong, I tell them most of the time. But I'm like,
nobody tells on himself better than Feidelberg. Dude comes out of the bathroom with just a fucking soaked fly. I pee in my pants. It's just a little bit of pee.
Just like, and people probably like, oh, like it's hot out. He's taking a sip of water, and like condensation fell on him because it's not a lot. It's just a little dot. But I'm like, just so everyone knows, this is piss.
Nobody pisses their pants better than you and YP. By the way, that picture of YP in the wetsuit, woo, buddy, you got me all boned up. Do you remember on KFC Radio when I was just like, YP, I want to fuck you in the ass. It's flat out said I want to have anal sex with my male coworker.
I got two today.
All right, go ahead.
All right. Let's see. First one. Am I the asshole for enjoying getting dressed up for funerals?
Did you write this? Are you about to just look at your phone and just read off the top of your head? So, I'm a 30-year-old male. I had to go to a funeral. Love
it. So I had a funeral today, but because of quarantine, I'm at the home where my suits are not. I had to get going. It was – the death happened before I had a chance to leave. I'm clearly reading this out of the top of my head.
I was totally fucking joking. And I was like, wait a minute. He did go to a funeral. This is about it. Oh, my God. Oh, you are a piece of shit.
Is it not crazy to want to look good wherever you go? And like, I had to wear an old high school suit today, and I was in my head the whole time. I'm like, my God, these pants aren't even tapered, John. You look ridiculous here.
That's great. I mean, you make a compelling argument. It's like, hey, if you're
to not look good,
right? It's like if you care about how you look when you go to the bar, you should care about how you look when you're paying last respects to someone you knew and love. You know, you can make the argument that if you don't care about being looking good at a funeral, you're the asshole.
Right. If you throw on sweatpants and like a t-shirt, right. Like whatever, it's a funeral. You're like a dick. Well, I want to make sure my nice clothes look nice. Okay.
If you dress up for a wedding, you should dress up for a funeral.
100%. I think today I wore a suit from high school. My dad, I look like a kid going to his first fucking job interview. I had my dad's shoes on, my dad's belt, high school suit, fucking old tie. I was like, this is ridiculous, John.
And even more than that, like you probably looked fine, but knowing your brain and what you always want to look like, you would probably stand there like just looking like a tense asshole. You know what I mean? Just being like, oh my God, I look terrible. I look terrible. I look terrible. I look like I'm wearing my dad's clothes. Oh man, that is so.
And here's the crazy part too. Here's the part that people hadn't thought about and maybe hopefully never have to think about. I was sitting in the car before I went into to the mass trying to decide which face mask was most appropriate for a funeral. I had four to choose from and I couldn't make a choice.
What were the choices?
There's a pattern. One was like a black and white, like striped. One was like it was green with tan dots. One was just green, and then one was like one of the medical ones. I went with just the medical one.
I was going to say, you can't lose the medical one. The medical one is like, you know, black, like white shirt, like gray, you know, black tie. Like it's just like standard medical. It's part of your routine now. If you try to dress it up, I think if you're going to try to get cute with your mask, you better fucking knock it out of the park.
I'll tell you what, there were some good masks in there.
Were they? Like matching to like a tie and shit, or just like a cool mask in general?
I don't know if they matched the tie, but they looked formal. They were like, it was like a black one that almost looked like Sub-Zero, where it had like the, you know, some people have those where it's like the pointy nose and it comes under the chin, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Someone had one of those where it was just black. Another guy had a nice maroon one, but there was one of the guys with like the, you pull up like the full scarf.
Mm-hmm.
Those don't fly in a funeral.
No, that looks like you forgot your mask and you just like wrapped it.
What another thing you have to judge people for now? I'm sitting in a funeral just being like inappropriate face mask.
What a goddamn world. Like I think about things like just like the number of like searches for masks that have been going on the last year, or like just the dumb side effects, like your vocabulary that changes or the things you need to do now. And we all just like, yep, it became pretty normal pretty fucking quick, I feel like. It's like, yeah, first you wear a mask. You gotta have your mask, all that shit.
By the way, on top of that, I did decide today this is going to be a verbal will. I'm going to tell my parents, but in case they disobey my wishes, I want everyone else to get mad and stuff like that. No funeral for me. None. It's official.
Throw you out of the trash?
Like, I'm dead serious. No, like, cremate me and then have, like, a party, but, like, don't have it – nothing religious. Just because, like, witnessing it today, I was just thinking if that was me, this is all so it would all be so disingenuous.
Right.
Because I don't think any of this – and I didn't live my life like any of this. So it's so silly to send me out like this for my last
part. Okay, but let me hit you with something else. You're dead. So fuck you, right? What if, like, let's say you died tragically. And I don't know if Polly's religious or not, but people have parents and grandparents who are religious. And they want to go do the whole dog and pony show, and that makes them feel better, shouldn't you be worried about that?
You can go to mass if you want. Go feel better at mass.
Just not with my dead body in the front.
Yeah, I don't like going to mass alive. Dead, just get me out of here, man. It's
okay.
Like, it just
– all right, let me ask you one more.
Like, it felt – like, I was just thinking, like, if that's there and, like, a priest was saying these things about him, like, he wouldn't even know me. Why is he talking about me so much?
Another curveball. What if you die a hero and your mass is going to be banged out? Like, the church is going to be filled.
You can have a party, just don't have it in church. Rent out a bar, rent out a house. You can't not. You can have a party, right? And like, I actually thought the eulogy was so beautiful today. And eulogies are dope. Have everyone come and give me a eulogy if you want to. You don't need one eulogy. Everyone get up and tell a quick story or whatever. I think that part's so nice. But just the other stuff with me just wouldn't make sense. It's just
I think that's interesting because I feel I like I just said a minute ago, for some reason I kind of think of weddings and funerals as like equal but opposite sort of thing. And people are moving away from weddings and churches. Why does it have to be like, why is it so automatic that you do like the death shit the same way in the church and the funeral home and all that and the prayer? And it's like,
right.
I want a non-denominational death. Just fucking throw the party. Yeah.
I think, yeah, like, I'm not saying don't remember me or anything like that. I'm not, like, doing the joke and throwing me in the trash. Remember me. Have me in an urn. Don't keep that urn forever. Go dump it somewhere after. Don't be, like, one of those, like, on a mantle people.
Yeah, that's
– I don't want to stick around forever.
No.
But have a party. Have me there. Like, I think it would be cool if everyone gets to give a little eulogy or if you want to or, like, everyone – and I also just don't like the unknown of it, right? Because everyone's uncomfortable because it's so formal. But it's, like, it's also not – Like I didn't know when to move. I didn't know. And then you see like the guys. I don't want to be handled by a dude from a funeral home. Yeah, I have my buddy carry.
Yeah, right?
Like when they're like pushing down the house.
That's why I'm so down with cremation. Because I mean, can you just imagine like some poor funeral director like with your flaccid dead dick flopping around while he's putting clothes on you and like draining your body of fluids and shit? Nobody should have to do that. Just throw me in the fire. This is crazy.
I don't even mean with like my body. I mean like when I'm in the coffin.
Yeah.
Like I've been a pallbearer before, and it's like this random dude's giving me instructions on how to carry my buddy. It's just like I wish you were just in an urn, man. Like it would
be a lot easier if I could just carry you like a fucking football right now. You pay instead. You pick like a 8,000-pound oak box. You fucking jerk. How about this?
Keep 6 feet of land forever. Forever, you'll be like, I don't need 6 feet of land forever. That's just expensive.
Crazy. Funerals are crazy expensive. And all for fucking what? No, take that to the bank, man. How about new idea, destination funerals?
Oh.
Meet me in like Cabo, bro. I'm dead. Meet you and all your friends down in Cabo because I said so.
Now, I love the idea because that's what my dad kind of wants. But you can't just be like, go dump me in Cabo.
Yeah, it's got to probably have, like, some meaning.
Some meaning.
But also, I don't know, like, if – let's say I – let's say Cabo, because I said so. What if I, like, vacation in Cabo, like, you know, every year or some shit? And I know it's awesome. I'm like, you've never been. And people haven't gone, but I have gone. I'm like, trust me. Like, meet in Cabo. Oh.
No, that means it has meaning. That 100% fits.
Maybe I don't have history there, but like I went to Santorini once, but it was fucking awesome. And I feel like I want to make sure everyone in the world has gone there before. Santorini's a bit much because that's like really fucking far. But if it means like I know you guys are gonna get there and be like, holy shit, this place is fucking awesome. Or does it have to be like he lived his life there?
I think you can get your ashes dumped wherever the hell you want. I think I'd be more interested to go if you were like, as my dying wish, I want you guys to go to Santorini together.
Right.
So that wouldn't necessarily be like your funeral. Like, I guess it could be. It would be like your remembrance trip. Yeah. Unless you wanted your ashes dumped there too, then it would kind of count as your funeral.
Yeah.
But if you die and you write a letter, like, you die your face out with some of my friends, I'd go in a heartbeat.
It's a funeral moon. Yeah, there's honeymoons, there's baby moons. Everybody just tacks moon onto the end. My funeral moon is for all you guys. I'm going to tell you where to go. And, I'll have like, I'm going to set it up so that, like, when I die, somebody at, like, whoever places a call to, like, the mansion that I wanted to rent out. It's like, it's time. You got to get out, like, for a week. It's time to rent the house. I told you this was going to happen. All my friends are going to be there for a week. It's the funeral mood.
That would be – that's legend status. That's you want to live forever? That's legend status.
Dude, I think we just revolutionized the funeral game. We got to open up, like, a funeral home now. Change the funeral game forever.
Let's just delete this and sell the idea. I don't want to deal with this.
I want to do the work. Let me hit with one more. Am I the asshole?
I got one more quick one too.
Oh, yeah, you got one too. One more each. Am I the asshole for not telling my girlfriend I had penis enlargement surgery?
Oh, I saw this one.
25 years old with a 22-year-old girl. I've been with her for a year and a half. She moved in with me before the lockdown. We were looking through an old photo album of her as a teen, and she had a different nose. She admitted to me she had plastic surgery as she was bullied a lot because of her nose at school. I was very accepting as it's not like she got a full-on Barbie surgery and she just fixed an issue that she had with herself. I understand why people get nose jobs and do other stuff to help self-esteem problems. I told her, it's okay. I understand why you got it. I fixed an insecurity myself when I was a little younger. During my teenage years, I felt very insecure about my penis size. When I was 21, finally had enough, got the enlargement. She asked what I fixed, and I said I got the enlargement surgery. I expected it to be all good, but she was enraged. She yelled at me that I should have told her all about that shit. I was confused because she had the nose surgery and didn't tell me. I asked her why she was mad. She had the surgery too, and her explanation was, such a chick. It's just different. So now she's gone cold with me. I kind of feel bad for not mentioning it early on in the relationship, but at the same time, this is about as open and shut as it gets. What's the difference?
Penis enlargement surgery is real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How much can you deck on there?
Let's see. Average penis enlargement. Now, that's cost. Enlargement size.
Oh, I'm curious.
Go on. This study found the average penis. No. Okay, let's see. How much does it cost?
I might do this for content.
Oh, yeah, content. $15,000 with an upfront cost of $1,000 deposit. It's called Penuma, which is just funny to me. That's just funny. How does the procedure work? Penuma is a crescent-shaped piece of medical-grade silicone inserted under your penis skin to make your penis longer and wider. It's provided in three sizes. Large. This is such good branding. Three sizes: large, extra large, and extra extra large. And there ain't no medium. There ain't no small. We're just big, big, and bigger, baby. You can get. Let's see. It'll be designed to fit your specific penis shape because you know we're all curving and different shit.
Not me, straight out of Gennaro.
Okay. Yeah. That's that. Whatever, dude. Fuck you. You can get about. An inch and a half to 2.5 inches. Wait, hang on. Okay. People who have had the Penuma procedure report increases in length and girth about 1.5 to 2.5 inches while flaccid and erect. The average male penis. Ooh. How big do you think the average male penis is?
Was that by that reaction? 4.5.
3.6 when flaccid. I thought I was going to say 3.6. I was like, yo, your boy's packing. 3.6 when flaccid, 5.2 when erect. And that, so here you go. Here's a good before and after. Penuma could enlarge a penis at... This could make your dick 6.1 inches when flaccid. That's a cock.
Yo, I'm showing out.
So here's this. It says you can have your dick will be 6.1 inches when flaccid and 7.7 when erect, which is all well and good. Give me like an almost 8-inch dick when I'm hard. A 6-inch soft dick is fire. That's fire.
No, I wear nothing.
If you told me that I could have a 6-inch flaccid dick, but it only goes to 6.5 when erect, I'd sign for that in a heartbeat. But if I gave you the choice of like 4 flaccid and 8 hard, or I just gave you the choice of 6 flaccid and it goes up, it's like a drawbridge. It stays 6 inches. It just goes up and down. I would take the 6 flaccid.
That's what a shower is. I had a buddy like that in high school who was like, he's like, yeah, it never grows. It just comes up like a drawbridge.
It's so good. If I had a 6-inch flaccid dick, I'd change my pants. Like I'd be in the middle of the office. I'd be like, sorry guys, I gotta just change my pants right now. Oh, look at my 6-inch flaccid dick.
You fucking do that anyway.
That's true. Man, a 6-inch flaccid dick is my dream. You know what? How insecure is every male about like? If a girl sees my flaccid dick, I either got to marry her or I got to kill her. Like one or the other. My flaccid penis is just so embarrassing. If I had a 6-inch tube just flopping in the wind, that's sexy. That's sexy, my friend.
Yeah, Kevin's like, I'll marry a guy with a 6-inch flaccid dick.
I'll suck that fucking flaccid dick. But seriously, back to the question, like I legit do not think there is a difference at all. And I think this girl's being a double standard asshole.
Yeah, 100%. No difference. It's like, but I can't even think of a joke for what the difference could be. There's no difference.
I mean, I guess like if a girl told me she got a nose job and her tits done, I would think of that the same way.
Like, so, yeah.
Fuck it. So you're a bitch. You're a bitch. You should be thankful that your boyfriend has a 6-inch flaccid dick.
Last one here. I haven't read the story at all. I just read the headline. It's amazing, so we're going with it. Am I the asshole for calling my brother an uptight loser who isn't as smart as he thinks he is?
I'm going to say, let me guess, though. I think this is going to be totally justified.
Okay. I'm going to say no. Yeah, that's a hard one. Like, you're just an uptight asshole. Isn't this smart?
I agree.
If you decide that I'm not as cool as I think I am, that's so much less mean than I'm not as smart as I think I am. Like,
definitely. You know, that's why I think you reserve it for people who need it. Like, I think that guy, if you're going to go that nuclear on him, it's probably because he deserves it. Let's hear it.
Me and my brother are wildly different people. I don't like to think I'm an extrovert, but I do enjoy being out with my friends. I do okay in school, not the best, but not the worst. I'm pretty average, so I won't be getting a scholarship to a good college anytime soon. My brother, on the other hand, is very gifted academically. I'm a year older, but he's in my grade, and it's been like that since we were 6 or 7. He's very introverted, and while he does have a friend group, he told me he has never talked to them outside of school. He also looks down on anyone who isn't in the top 10 academically at our school. All his friends are in the top 10. They constantly talk down to people at the school, and I know this may sound mean, but no one likes them because they're just assholes to everyone and think that no one likes them because they are smart and everyone else is jealous. Yesterday, I wanted to get lunch with my friends. My dad told me I couldn't because he didn't want me to waste the gas or something I can't really remember. I gave a kind of joking grunt and said, okay, and I wasn't going to go. My brother straight up said, maybe instead of going out with your friends, you can work on your studies and get your grades up to mine. I'm a B, occasional C student. I wasn't having it because he always does this sort of crap and looks down on everyone, especially me. I straight up told him, dude, you and your friends are uptight losers who think you're better than everyone because you're smart. College is going to be a real ass kicker because you're not nearly as smart as you think you are. He said, and I quote, what did you just fucking say? I told him I wasn't in the mood to fight and went to my room. Am I the asshole? Nah, you're right.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, that kid sucks. That guy sucks. And he's right. I think when you get to college, even if you are smart, like if you don't know how to like hang out at a party or go out or be social, you're going to be the fucking asshole. I would absolutely rather my kids grow up to be like a BC student who just like know how to like handle themselves than be the academic like weirdo.
Dude, I swear to God, there are a lot of things that say to me I'm a nice guy to me. And the nicest one in my life is that I wasn't the biggest bully in the world to this one particular kid in elementary and middle school. He was like the oh no one likes me type kid. He was exactly this kid.
Mm-hmm.
His name was government. His name was James, and he was green pole all the time. He had a fake British accent. It didn't make any goddamn sense. Like his parents weren't British or anything. But maybe it's just in my head. He just sounds the British because from memories, and he's just smart. But he's a fucking really smart dude. And he was just such a dick and so condescending and such a piece of shit. And I was like, listen here, buddy, I'm way bigger than you. If I was fucking, if I was nice, I mean, if I was mean, I'd bully the shit out of you. And I was honestly, I was trying to be nice to him. And it was like, he used the media. Like, dude, no. I'm a cool kid here, and I'm trying to be nice to you. Fucking accept it.
Accept my gift of fucking benevolence, of mercy on you. I think that the best thing you can be.
You know what? I run these hallways, dude. I could end your shit in a heartbeat.
The best kid to be. I remember a couple dudes at Fordham who were like the biggest booze bags, the guys who could just make beers disappear, would go like all night long. And then I would hear that like, oh, that guy's also got like a 4-0. And he never talked about it. He was never, it didn't define his personality. He was just like, yeah, I'm good at school. I get these papers and these tests done, whatever. Let's like go out some fun. Best guy to be. If you're smart and you make that like everything about yourself, it's because you know you have no personality. Like that, like being like, I only respect you if you're in the top 10. It's because it's like, well, those are the only other people who would even find me interesting because I've got nothing else to offer except my brains. So, I mean, if I seriously, I'm trying to think of how low I would want it to go. Like, what grades would I want my kids to get? Like a B or C student, fine. Like a D student, I'd probably have to pick like, I need you to be smarter than that, you know?
Yeah, I need you to be better.
like a C minus. If you're coming home and you've got like all sorts of friends and you're good at sports and you're just like, you know, everybody likes you otherwise, it's like, Dad, I got like a I got like a 70 on my test again. I'm like, all right, that's okay. No big deal.
I'd be like a 70. That's fucking great.
You can't be in the 60s. That's tough.
Well, it depends on what time. If you're getting anything but A's in elementary school, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, A's, you better get A's in elementary school, dude. This is baseline stuff. It's addition, dude.
In elementary school, you're next to, like sometimes you're next to, like, handicapped kids. Like, you better be getting this shit right.
Yeah, there aren't even special needs in this school. It's right. Just school.
It's just lumped in.
There's no special needs class. It's just class. And then middle school, you can get a couple B's here. High school, a couple C's. College, what the fuck ever.
Yeah, okay. It's just get across the stage or don't. Look, proof positive. Doesn't even fucking matter.
Or not. Whatever.
That does not even slightly matter. Let's do our voicemail.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Voicemails, what do we got, Nikki?
KFC, Fikes, BC, got a quick hypothetical for you. So suppose all you had to do in order to learn a foreign language was nail the accent. So you're still speaking English, like you just got to nail speaking with that accent. How many languages do you think you would be proficient in or totally fluent or just like close to being able to actually speak? Later.
Well, John pretends to speak Spanish, so I'm going to cede the floor to him.
I right now, how many languages do I speak? God damn, I speak 15, 20.
All of them? You speak like one and a half. You speak Irish and a little bit of Jamaican, because that's just what happens when you do accents. It just devolves into that same voice every time.
But what are you talking about, Kevin? I think I do the accent. The Irish dog is perfect. Look at here, you little lad. Don't you come around here talking shit about the Irish brogue. This accent right here is perfect, Kevin. What else would you like me to say? What else could I possibly prove to you? Huh? Now, would you like me to go Jamaican, man?
That's it. You speak Gaelic and you speak
Southern. I speak Southern, no doubt about that. No siree.
Southern. I'm fluent in Southern, you hear?
And speak in German. Of course I speak in German, Kevin. I speak German all the time. All of the time I can do this is a language. And what about the Portuguese? Do I know Portuguese?
Portuguese!
Portuguese! Portuguese! I know how to speak in Portuguese. Alright, go home. I'm Italian mother, honey. I'm Italian mother. I do Italian too. I do Italian all the time, Kevin.
That your Italian just became like Indian for a second. There, give me a little Australian, John.
Well, mate, is this what you like? You want an Australian accent? I'll give it for you, kid. And listen here, Bruce. Listen here, Bruce. Like, when I go to Rhodesia, when I get the blood diamonds,
Wow. I applaud you for even trying to go there. That was special. You speak, at least eight languages.
Yeah, man. I speak fucking crazy languages. This is a great...
if you had a resume right now, have you ever had a resume?
Not once in my life.
Not once. You white privileged motherfucker! Never even had a resume! Dude, that's crazy. You know what I'm gonna make you do? I'm gonna make you make a resume.
Why?
For content. I wanna see your resume. I wanna see what you could even put on that fucking thing.
Landscape one summer.
Yeah, okay, that counts. Bartending, that counts. I wanna see how you, when you say, like, remember when I was saying that being like a funeral director is like a party planning services. Like you can just you can just package it up different ways. I want to see you put lipstick on that thing.
I'm gonna intentionally make it funny because like I know what it's for.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You have to get me fired, and then I have to go find a job. That'd be a good content piece.
I want to see, but particularly at the bottom where you put like other skills, like people used to put like I'm proficient in Microsoft Excel, and I'm like casual with PowerPoint. I mean, I don't think you're like I can tweet, and that's about it.
I can tweet. I speak Spanish. I would definitely put in Spanish.
and all these other languages, proficient in 8 languages.
And I would put I can cleat a boat.
So okay, that's like transportation, like maintenance.
All right. I don't.
I would love just someone being like. It says here you're fluent in Southern. What does that mean exactly? And then you just break into an accent. This is like a Charlie Kelly episode of Sunny. You know? Oh, you're Australian. G'day, mate. How you doing?
What does it mean that you're Southern? Well, sir, how much time you got?
I do declare I'm Southern. I don't even know what the question was in the voice. Oh, the languages. You're fluent. You're a world traveler. Next up.
Hey, KFC Fight, super producer BC. So a quick hypothetical. Would you rather be able to only take baths for the rest of your life? So no showers, you don't have to commit 20, 30 minutes to being in there, or never be able to brush your teeth again? Thanks.
I mean, what are we doing here?
Wait, what was it? Never brush your teeth again or what?
So you got no showers. You got to take baths. I mean, it's an easy peasy one. I think there's good precedent on both sides. I think maybe there's a good question here somewhere, but this isn't it. I mean, I can't just not brush my teeth.
Okay. I was getting scared for a minute that you were going to go the opposite direction. If you're still giving me like a more appropriate would be like you don't get to bathe your body. It's like clean your mouth, right, and clean your body.
Yeah, know? That's a good question.
Yeah, that – I mean, baths are – I enjoy baths not to like – shit. Like when you clean your body in a bath, that's gross because then you're sitting in your own filth. But if you – that's still an option to clean yourself versus –
Have you taken a bath?
You have no teeth. You'd be like George Washington. It's just not even a fucking option.
Have you taken a bath like remotely recently?
Have I taken a bath what?
Like remotely recently?
Not in this apartment. I've been here for like 2 years. I fuck with that stuff. Huh?
Do dicks still float?
Mine doesn't sink.
like when you were a kid and it was kind of float there, does it do that now with just more dick?
Yeah. Yeah, they're buoyant. Your dick's still buoyant.
Yeah?
I think so. I don't know. I never really looked at this. I never really like looked and see if my dick was floating.
We'll have to ask Chaps. I'm curious. Yeah. I wonder if it was just the weight of a baby penis.
Right. Like what's the mass of your penis? You know, that's really what it's about. You know, buoyancy and displacement, I don't get it. I know it's something to do with mass and density, not just weight. So if my dick's heavy enough, I don't think it matters, you know?
What about the no cleaning body? What's your take on that one?
If it's no clean the body or no clean the mouth?
Yeah.
It's still got to be the mouth because you can – I mean, trust me, it would be a catastrophe. But there's deodorant and body sprays and stuff. If your teeth are rotting out of your head, it's a no-go. You're not getting a job. You're not getting a girlfriend. You're not getting friends.
Are you talking about a guy who only brushes his teeth once a week?
You?
No, you don't. Don't you like never brush your teeth in the mornings or something like that?
I don't brush my teeth at night. I brush them during the day.
See, I like no matter what time I decide I'm ready for bed, I like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake up, I get up out of bed and go brush my teeth. I have to.
You especially have to because you're gonna knock like 4 or 5 Sour Patch Kids out of like your molars at any given moment. So
hey, what's up, KFC Fights? So you know, I'm a pretty fit dude. I stay in shape usually, but you know, Corona's been hard on all of us, and you know, I'm not getting flabby or nothing or putting on too much weight, but it's, you know, a little bit more in areas that not usually there, just with the limited workout equipment I got. But I was driving in my car the other day with my girl, and you know, no one looks flattering sitting down in a car seat, and it kind of pushes out your gut a bit. And she had the audacity to reach over and like scratch my belly and be like, oh, what a cute little tummy there. And I wasn't so much offended as just like dumbfounded that she would say that, and also like had to be silent and not even respond because I don't know how to even react to that and still have a happy relationship. So I guess my question for you guys is just, what's the most ridiculous thing a girl has ever said to you that you would get slapped into next Sunday if you said to her? All right, thanks, boys.
Peace. Well, I was going to say, you know, you want to combat this, you got to be like, oh, yeah, it's about as fat as your ass, lady, or whatever. Just let her fucking have it. It's just as big as your love handles. It's as fat as your stomach. It is, I mean, could you imagine doing that? You reach over to a girl and you scratch her belly. And you're like, woohoo, like the fucking Pillsbury Doughboy. It'd be a problem. It'd be a big problem.
Yeah, be a big problem, Kev. Be a big problem.
I mean, I don't think you can say anything too critical, like about any body part or facial feature or anything, you know?
To anybody?
To anybody, but definitely not your girlfriend. Like, there's no way. We had this conversation a couple weeks ago. Like, what do you say to your girl if she's getting fat? You'll say fucking anything. You just now have a fat girlfriend. That's how it goes. <That's>
it. I honestly don't know what the answer here. This is a question as old as time. There's just nothing you can say. There's nothing. It's over. It's done.
I think the only thing, like right this moment, right now, I think you can't be the one to bring it up. But if like a girl is talking about like her eyebrows or her roots or something, if there's like something out of her control, I think you maybe could like reply to it or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way that you can say anything to her where it's just like so obvious that it's not your fault. But no, I think at any point, if you say something about a girl's appearance, and rightfully so, as we keep talking about learning and shit here, it's like a guy's appearance doesn't really fucking matter. And a girl's appearance, it does. And so when their appearance is not great, it's way fucking worse. So they can scratch your fat belly. Because guess what? You can still make money and get laid and have friends and all that shit with a fat belly. Not the same for girls. So,
dude, that happens to me. Like when I wake up, Lil Spoon, and it's just like my belly is just getting like... Oh.
The gravity that occurs when your little spoon sitting on its side and your belly almost has this like slope downwards and then it just plateaus out and your fat just rests on the bed. Oh.
And you just have like a hand like trapped under it and I'm like, what the hell, man? I gotta start, you know, like girls like in movies and stuff like set alarms when they're in a new relationship to go do makeup and come back in bed. Yeah. I gotta set an alarm to move your hand so you don't wake up from me and feel my fucking back and gut.
Last voicemail before we get into Bill Burr.
The High Noon El Prez Pack is here featuring my top four High Noon Vodka Seltzer flavors. These flavors include passion fruit, pineapple, pear, and all new flavor, tangerine, all made with real vodka, real juice. This 12-pack is only here for a limited time, so get it while you can. Just look for the pack with my face on it. You can even scan the QR code in the pack and have me virtually join your party. Visit highnoonspirits.com to find the El Prez pack nearest you.
What's up, boys? So I got a weird question for you. All right, I'm just going to jump into it. Do you think that you could give a better hand job than a regular girl? Just now think about it. So, like, how many times have you jerked yourself off? Like, thousands of times? Random girl's not... give them thousands of hand jobs. Usually they stop giving hand job by like, I don't know what, seventh grade? It's just when it's the last time you get a hand job. So do you think you could give a better hand job than a girl?
I think it depends on what girl we're talking about. I think if it's, you know, like your average girl, your average like girlfriend, yes. If we're talking about like the Asians at a rub and tug, those girls will jerk you off. They'll pull your dick clean off your body.
I think it's no straight across the board.
Really?
Yeah, first of all, I don't like the lotions and stuff, so I'm out on that. So there, I'm already playing with the advantage handicap here. And then also, I'm not good with the same piece of work but a different tool. Like right hand, I'm lost. So if you give me a whole new tool, I don't even know what I'm doing over there.
Let me explain to you how I would jerk a guy off. When I tie my kid's shoes, I find it hard to tie shoes from head on. Like, I'm used to looking down at a shoe. Now I'm looking at the shoe. And I, so when I tie my kid's shoes, I get like behind them and I tie it the same way. If I was jerking you off, I would reach around your stomach and jerk your dick off like it was my own. And then I would give you a fire hand job. If you expect me to do it looking at you, it would be a disaster. But if I could reach around your fat belly and jerk you off, it would be perfect.
So like it was in bed, you'd be laying like head toe, but like back further.
Yes, exactly. That's how you give a good hand job, folks. And if that's what we're talking about, I give a great handy. If it's otherwise, if I got to jerk you off, like I'm kneeling or laying down, nope. But if I can do it like I do it, I'm going to make you come, bro.
Yeah, if I got to be staring down the business end, I'm in trouble. But yeah. if I get all my that. Point of view.
Think about if you look, and this is girls, God bless them. When you look into the hole, when you're looking at a dick hole that's staring back at you, that's gross. That's disgusting. And honestly, I watched a porn the other day with a guy who was uncircumcised, and it's just any porn that has a guy who's uncircumcised, don't show me the dick before it's popping out of the hole. That's unbelievably off-putting, okay? That's talking dicks with KSU Radio. Let's talk to our buddy Bill Burn. He's a friend of ours now. I'd love to sit down with Bill, crack open a Miller Lite, and talk about the NFL in like the 1960s, the NFL before the merger, football prior to the NFL to Super Bowl III. Bill Burr loves talking old school sports. I want to sit down and talk about Bruins hockey with him. I want to sit down and talk about stand-up comedy with him.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Bill Burr, let's talk to him.
Hello, hello.
What's up, Billy? Hey.
How we doing? What's going on? Oh, the COVID beard. I love it.
Yes, got one. I've been getting crushed every time.
I like it. I like it. Both of you guys, man.
Hey, man. I haven't gotten a haircut. I haven't shaved since. So we'll see how long this shit goes on for. I don't know.
Well, it's good. It is playoff time.
That's right. Yeah, right. Just making our own playoff beards. How are you guys doing? Your family safe and good and everything?
Yeah. Everything's, you know, I'm concerned about people who aren't able to continue making a living in the next 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these people out there twerking at the beach, whatever the fuck they're doing, I hope nothing happens to them. And, you know, people can get back to work. You know, I don't know. Somebody just sent me something that they found like 24 cases of this new strand of it that actually affects children. I'm just like, what the fuck?
It's gotten the overload of it has gotten like, this is like a coward's way out with it, but like it's gotten so much where I'm like, I just tell me when I'm allowed what to do. Like,
yeah. I did that the first day. I haven't watched the news the whole time. I have no fucking idea. I was late to the whole, you got to get vitamin D. That shit's all gone.
Well, honestly, I feel like everybody'd be better off because now apparently all of a sudden everyone's a fucking scientist, an economist, a brilliant doctor. I mean, everybody apparently can talk on these topics
because they
way above our pay grade.
They're sick of being home. And I feel like they're just saying or seeking out information that tells them
what they want.
That what they want to hear so they can go back to work and shit. And, you know, and then you got, you know, what's his face there? Just saying crazy shit and then saying he was being sarcastic, which in a way was almost worse.
Right.
Oh, you're
right.
Just fucking around.
Why are you being sarcastic, asshole?
What a great time to be sarcastic. I'm gonna do it so well nobody knows I'm fucking around. It's just like
sure, that makes sense.
I'm trying so hard to root for that guy. I'm trying so hard. to stick up for him, because it is not 100% his fault. It's a world issue right now. And the amount of people out there who are just doing whatever the F they want to continue this thing going, it's not 100% him. But when you say to inject household cleaners
into your body
and then be like, just fucking with you, got you, I'm just like, oh boy.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, the thing is so crazy, there aren't people who just, like, there are people who just listen to things.
I know.
People just go out and do that. And I think, like, I saw, like, an ER doctor in, like, New York or somebody tweeted, like, today we had someone come in who had been drinking bleach. And they were like, the president said, it's like, why would you, like, it's almost hard to blame him there.
That's how hard, like, if you think sports fans are loyal and can't see the cheap shot artists on their own team, when you get into politics,
right?
The sports is just sports. At the end of the day, your team chokes or whatever. Another city gives you shit. It sucks or whatever. But this is literally messing with people's belief systems and the afterlife, their ability to make a living and all that. So this is going to get crazy. So I'm just trying to be like, you know.
I feel like it's still going to get worse before it gets better. I feel like we're in like the middle of it. People think we're coming to the end of it. But anyway.
Keep saying they're going to open up cities the way, like, you know, when your flight's delayed. That's just going to be another 20 minutes. That's going to be another 20 minutes. They just keep going.
I don't know what to do. Like, New York is for sure going to be the last place open. Am I just going to stay here until it's open? Or you just start leaving? I don't know.
I don't know. But the good thing is we picked a business where you can actually do this stuff and have a few advertisers. And
for real.
You know.
I was saying that to my cousin the other day. He came over and I was like, he's like, how's things going? We're like playing basketball, socially distant. And I was like, I'm very lucky. Like, I'll be honest, I'm a little sick of it. I wish I could go out, but like, I'm good. You know, there are plenty of people who can't work, can't get food. You know, I'm getting like food delivered, all that stuff. Like, it's fine, but it is like, it's getting to the point where at first I was like, just stay home. And now I'm like, I get just wanting to be outside even a little bit.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the more densely populated it is, the more hardcore you have to be. Like, I got a buddy of mine lives out in like Tennessee, and he goes, it's not like the way it is like in New York or even like in LA, where everybody's just sort of really slammed in together, where if someone does something stupid, like, you know, out here a bunch of kids had a party like I would if I was their age, and there was some kid out there coughing like, oh, imagine if I had it, and then he did.
Yeah.
And then he started like he or she started a mini breakout out there. So even that one, I don't get mad at the kids. It's the parents, where somewhere along the line between my parents and whatever goes on now, parents, these people stop being afraid of their parents, and now they're sort of buddies with them. Like, stop. They hang out.
Like, if you were, I don't know, 16, 17, whatever years old, would you be like sneaking out and partying, or were you too afraid of your old man to do any of that shit?
Both. I would probably get out at least once or twice a month. I would, because all my friends would have been doing it. And then they'd be like, oh, what the fuck, man?
Pussy.
You're in like the Brady Bunch house. And that would have been enough to be like, no, I'm not. And I would have done it. So I guess I feel for their parents too. Cause like how like the level of communication that exists between kids now is like the CIA had that when I was a kid. Where they could be like, yeah, hey, I'm upstairs. Hey, yeah. Like, you could just, anywhere you're walking around, you have this device that can video and all this shit. So you got a bunch of J. Edgar Hoovers walking around like 15 years old. I mean, I can't imagine the dumb shit I would have done if you gave me that sort of stuff, you know?
Being a teenager now, I don't even know how they do it. The amount of shit that can go online and the video, it's all fucking crazy, man. But we last night, both John and I got an advanced copy of King of Staten Island.
Oh, okay.
It's fucking awesome.
Oh, thank God.
And I'm really just saying that. Like, really enjoyed it. It's a bomb squad cast. And I know that, you know, you did Breaking Bad and Mandalorian and you have acting experience, but this was a fucking hell of a performance, Bill. I mean, you did some heartfelt acting.
If you weren't one, first of all, Kevin and I, like, we get a lot of, you know, screeners, obviously, because we have guests on. And, like,
you
guys, we don't
know. In the mix. I think you're trying to say you're in the mix.
We have some guests here and there. No big deal. But we never like, watch it at the same time and text throughout the whole thing. And we were both like, hey, you know what? We're popping it on right now. So the whole time, we're like, this is fucking unbelievable. And at one point, I said, if you weren't the greatest, one of the greatest comedians ever, I would start thinking of you as an actor who does comedy because you were so good in this.
How's that? Oh, nice.
Praise, Billy Boy.
There you go. It was the mustache, man. The mustache.
That's a great mustache.
Took over for a few. I think it is because a lot of people think it's fake. So I was like, all right, that's cool.
I was just going to ask you, it's not fake?
No, it's real.
I had a feeling that was real. You can grow a good one. I had a feeling that was the real deal. Did you think about keeping it?
No, it was driving me nuts because Club Soda Kenny, my tour manager, I was saying, all right, dude, because he's, you know, former cop. He goes, you got to grow it where the hair covers the top lip. Oh. And that was just like, you know. Too much. Yeah, I tried to keep food simple. So, you want a little hollandaise sauce? Nah, I'm all set on that. Just give me, have the eggs scrambled hard. I'll have dry toast. Because it was just like, it was driving me nuts. Like, it was, if I wasn't eating, it wasn't bad. Like, if I had hat and sunglasses on with that mustache, I was just a I was looking at, like, I was a completely different dude.
Right.
And I was kind of looking in the mirror like, who the fuck is this guy? This is kind of, my wife hated it.
Oh, sure.
That's unbelievable that it was real, because I almost didn't ask if it was real because I didn't want you to call me an idiot. I didn't.
Oh, you know what's funny is there's another movie I did and they had me use a fake one and I was going like, you know, I can grow one. They're like, no, it's cool. And, you know, because it's also like when they put it together, the cinematographer, there's a certain look that they're looking at. So sometimes a fake one actually looks better. I don't know how it works, but what having a fake mustache, when they glue that shit on, that stuff that they put underneath you, you got to have like a mini fan blowing the fumes away and you just hold your breath and they put it on you. And then the whole time you're doing it, it's like, it's constantly this, it's coming up here and someone's got to do it again. And just, look, this is nothing compared to those people that like underneath the things with the straws up their nose, but like just a fake mustache was enough for me to be like, yeah, I don't need to be doing any close encounter type shit.
What else have you done, if anything, that really compared to like this role? Is this like the deepest you've ever gone with acting? I know, like I said, I know, you know, I'm familiar with some of your work, but are there other roles where you're doing, you know, fatherhood and love and kids and all that shit?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, no, this is the first time a character of mine ever had like a romantic sort of storyline. And I was having a panic attack. Like I was saying to my wife, I should have said no to this. I can't fucking do this. I'm just, you know, I can play an asshole, you know, and I was really in my head and I had to kind of do the whole, dude, just like chill out. All right. You know, like on-screen kiss. I never did that before.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, making out with Marissa Tomei is no fucking joke.
Hey, no fucking joke. Yeah, no, I was nervous about all of that, but I just was like, all right, Bill, have you ever kissed a woman before? Yes. Okay. Do that. Why are you acting like you're like 14 again?
I mean, and it is different in front of a camera though. I can kiss a girl.
In front of a camera. Dude, when we did the kiss in front of the house, like the way they shot it, like the neighbors, just regular people were sitting on their stoop watching the whole process. Yeah. As we're going like, is this like a kiss? Is this just a quick goodbye? Blah, 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 blah. Like, thank God I got to do it like with such an experienced like actor. Like she just knew, the ins and outs of the whole thing. She, I worked with some amazing people. Like she might be the best I ever worked with. She was unbelievable. And there was so much stuff that she was doing that I didn't even notice because, you know, you got your lines in your head, you know, like trying to not look at the camera and stuff. So when I actually watched it, it was all this subtle stuff that she was doing. I mean, you saw her play Edith Bunker right before it too, which I finally watched because everybody told me how hard she crushed it. And I was already nervous about working with somebody who had won an Oscar. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to watch that because I'm already in my head enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the stuff screaming at Pete, that was easy. Cause
when you start, you know, you're like, you're fucking kidding. And I'm like, all right, it's Bill. He's doing it. And then it was like, it took a turn. It was a whole new guy. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I think that was all like, the way Judd and Pete put it together. that it was kind of cool that I don't want to give away too much, but the first time people see me is like the first impression of Pete and his family or whatever. So it was really cool how they edited it that way. And there's so many, and not to mention, there's so many amazing people in the thing that I got to work. I never worked with Dom Lombardozzi before, who's on The Wire, Boardwalk Empire. My favorite, I can't say this stuff because I don't want to ruin it. Steve Buscemi.
Even Machine Gun Kelly, Action Bronson, little roles.
Bronson was hilarious.
Yeah.
Action Bronson just once he just kind of threw a wall, Bill.
Huh?
Action Bronson once threatened me to throw me through a wall. Our interview did not go well.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I had a good time. I would like to see that.
Bill, I had a good time too.
Spielberg just sat there like, all right, go ahead and do it. I was like,
I turtled. I was like, I'm Kevin, you're on your own on this one, bud.
Yeah. Well, I would not want him to get his hands on me. That guy, that's a strong dude.
I
love his show too. You ever watch that show, Fuck That's Delicious?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I mean, those guys are like, it's funny to look at them. You'd think that they were eating it like White Castle.
No, they're like,
you look at him like, oh, that's all gourmet food. That's that's legit.
How was Pete? I mean, Pete's had a crazy rise and, you know, public life and all that shit. I thought you guys had like an unbelievable rapport. Did you know him beforehand through comedy or anything? Or was that the first experience you
ever had? I met, believe it or not, I met Pete. I was doing, Jim Norton put together this tour, which I swear to God, this was a show. It was unbelievable. It was called the Anti-Social Network Tour. And it was Jim Norton, Dave Attell, Jim Brewer, and myself.
Wow.
So I used to watch all three of those because I'm a huge fan of all of those guys. And like, you know, when I first came to New York, Jim Brewer and Dave Attell, they were like gods. And like, I remember there was a couple guys like Pete Corielli used to go on the road with Brewer. And I remember thinking like, wow, man, he knows those guys. It was an amazing thing. So just to be on it was incredible. So anyway, so we did the tour and I was down in Atlantic City. And of course, the day of that, the fucking Patriots played the Jets and lost at home that game.
Good. Fucking good.
Then all these guys in the front row had Jets jerseys on, man. I got trashed during that show. So I'm coming out the next day out of the lobby, out of the hotel lobby there, whatever casino where you're at. I'm like, I was like ducking out, you know, trying to make sure I don't get trashed by Jet fans. And this woman came up to me with this tall, skinny kid. And she's just going like, we thought you were so funny last night. This is my son. He wants to be a comedian. And he was just kind of standing there, right? And I never forgot him. He just, I guess, would you like...
Well, he's 9 feet tall, right?
Well, he also has like that, he has that it thing that they say in the business. He just has it. And I remembered it. And I was like, yeah, she said she already had driven him to his first open mic. So I was like, I said, hey, man, you're doing it right. I didn't start till I was like 23, almost 24. It's a young man's game. You know, he asked me a couple questions, I think. He was really like sort of awkward and shy or whatever. And then years later when I met him, he goes, you know, I don't know if you remember this. And he started telling the story. I go, outside the elevator, that tall, skinny kid, that's you. He's like, yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so we always kind of had that cool thing. And as he, you know, rose up so fast, I think I got to know him, like after, I got to really know him after he got on like SNL and stuff. And like, he started to do like, started selling tickets and stuff. And I was in New York or something and he was asking me questions, you know, cause promoters try to steal from you and all of that, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Ins and outs of the business, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So we kind of got to know each other that way. He did a Patrice O'Neill, he did one of the benefits for that. And I just, you know, he just was always like, and I remember when I watched him doing stand-up, his poise and what he was talking about really impressed me. And so I was like, all right, this guy, you know, it's all if they stick with it, if they have the work ethic, you don't get sidetracked and all, like, this guy is going to be, he's going to be a force.
With, you were talking about earlier with like the nerves of, you know, Marissa Tomei, First Kiss and all that, having to do that on top of having to like act someone's real life or semi real life, Like that must have been really weird to have to do that. I remember in the movie Honey Boy, Lucas Hodges says with like Shia LaBeouf, he was like kind of asking for permission to like go to certain levels. Was there ever any of that with you? Were you like, I don't know if I should say this because it's like, you know, he's real life.
Yeah, there was a couple jokes talking about Pete's character's dad, the one who died in the hotel fire, not his real dad.
Right.
So there's a couple jokes where I was kind of like, I don't know if my character could say that and Marissa's character would still like me. And then most of it was the firehouse stuff. And that was the stuff where it was like, you know, we went one day, we all met all the people that worked with Pete's dad. And we went down to the firehouse where he was at. And they had all the 9/11 stuff up on the wall and they had pictures of his dad and all that. And then I was just like, oh my God, what have I got myself into? I have to do this justice.
Yeah.
So there was like, you know, the cool thing about firemen is they bust balls the way comedians do. Yeah. So there was a couple, you know, the number of, aside from Steve Buscemi, who actually was a firefighter before he became an actor, there was a number of people on the show, Mario, John Sorrentino, just really that actually, John actually knew Pete's dad, was in the firehouse at some period when his dad was over there. I can't quite remember, but like he was a guy those were the guys I was always going over to, was like, does that sound right? Does that sound like real? They're like, great, great, great. Or like, do it more like this. Or don't put the mask on like that. Don't go like this. Yeah, you're a boss. So you sit there and you do all this, you know, the whole firehouse etiquette. And I would just sit there listening. You know what I mean? I mean, it was definitely more than just growing the big stupid mustache. I just would have looked like me with a mustache. So
definitely looked the part, like, you know, in the scenes where you're in action and shit and you got the gear on and everything. It was like, as far as I know.
That was the hottest fucking day I knew it was going to be of the summer.
Yeah,
it was just like the way they lined it up. It was the last week of July. Last week of July, we're going to shoot the fire in the Bronx. I'm like, all right. So I remember the day before wasn't that hot. And we were driving up to block the scene. You know what I mean? So we all knew what we were going to do. So the next day when we put on all of that shit. But I have to say, they went out of their way with like the mobile air conditioners and all that type of shit. I can't imagine like, and what's so funny, it was a Hollywood fire. So you do a couple of takes and be like, oh, give me the I don't know how these guys really do it because right. That equipment is so fucking heavy. It's ridiculous. So me and Dom drove up. I remember smoking a cigar in his car on the way up, just laughing, talking about how great our lives were. And we're actually getting paid on the clock driving. But we'd shot something in the morning out in Staten Island. And then we were heading up to the Bronx where we were going to shoot the fire scene. And we had a great time. I mean, all those people that I worked with, Hank, Giselle, all of those guys that played the firefighters, it was great. We just, after a while, it was kind of became like, we were just all busting chops anyway. Giselle was another one who was an actual firefighter. So it just became like this amalgam of firefighters and actors all, and, you know, stand-up comics all just giving each other shit. So we would just be giving each other shit before the camera rolled, during, and then after. Jimmy Tatro was unreal. I'm trying to remember everybody's name. I should have had all this stuff in front of me, but it was awesome, dude. It was really, it was a lot of fun.
And so now it's going on demand because of quarantine and coronavirus and all that shit?
Yeah, because you can't two things. One, you can't go to the movie theater, and then that Trolls movie, that kid Trolls movie, like destroyed.
Right. Well, I was gonna say, I think it's gonna be a big hit in quarantine.
Yeah, so then I think people were going like, all right. So if there's a bunch of parents with quarantine kids, there's a bunch of people like you guys. Mm-hmm. Sitting there, I'm losing my fucking mind. I can't watch Trolls. Can you give me something? So that's what we're hoping for. I think it's gonna. I think I got a, you know, I got a good feeling about this one.
I got a great, great feeling. I was worried about like how much ball washing I was gonna do when we got on this podcast because I love the movie so much. It was fucking
you don't have to do that. I literally all I did was, you know, stand up. It's acting. You stand on a piece of tape and you say what somebody else wrote. So.
Oh, okay. It's stand up comedy. You just stand on stage and make jokes. You can do that with anything, Bill.
Yeah, but with stand up comedy, it's just like the crowd can like attack you and you get humiliated and you're up there by yourself. No one could say like, okay, cut. All right, now in this one, try it this way.
All right. But what was the last time you bombed, Bill?
Huh?
When was the last time you bombed? Has it been a long time?
Oh, no.
Really?
No, it was recent.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet it's a different kind of bombing. It's because I know how to do it. I can handle it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like getting down by 20 and you don't panic. Right. All right, you know, halftime.
We're fine.
Game of runs. Yeah. I get them back. Let's see. I did. Right before the pandemic, I was popping into like bars that were doing stand up just mm-hmm. because I just had a bunch of stuff I wanted to try out. And the Comedy Store is just jam-packed every night. And there was somebody up in the belly room, because I usually go up to the belly room to try stuff out. And I was just like, hey, let me get out of this area. And I went, and it was, I don't know, it was just a very specific, it was almost like a radio audience. Like, we appeal to white males, 18 to 34. Yeah. This was like, I don't know what the deal was, but I just got a lot of oohs and it was like I was bombing, but probably maybe last summer. You know, I was trying out this bit about this lesbian who bumped into me on purpose. And I did the bit and I got like halfway through it. And I didn't realize it was sort of the gay show. I should have known because it was all these penises with the balls all like these little paper. I don't know why.
You probably still notice. Yeah.
I don't know why. Because on the straight show, there's not like vaginas with a dick going into it. I don't understand. And especially when you have all these extreme people on the right saying they're ungodly and all this type of shit, you know, you're kind of steering into it that when, okay, it's gay night and then there's a bunch of dicks on the stage, but whatever. Wasn't my party. I crashed it. So I went up on stage and I did the bit and it was my first night telling it. And I got about 3/4 of the way through it and these two women yelled out in unison. So I think they planned it. They said, lesbians aren't trying to be men. Or lesbians aren't men or something. And I got into it with them. It escalated to a fuck you. And, you know, it was classic stand-up comedy security. They kicked the person out just a half an inch past the door. Don't lock the door. And then they're like, well, that's that. So I got off stage and I was like, where are they? They're like, oh, they're gone. I'm like, they're gone? He goes, yeah. I'm like, all right. So I put the hoodie up. Start walking through the restaurant, anticipating the second I get outside, they're going to be there, right? I didn't even get outside. They were at the bar. Hey, fuck you, fuck all that stuff, right? And I gave it right back to them. I looked like I was arguing a call with two female umpires. So then I walked down the street, and it took me about 3 days before I kind of came down from it, and I was thinking like, all right. Do I want to be doing that? Not like I was like mad for 3 days, but every time I think of it, yeah. I'd be like, you know, I'd be whispering to myself, and maybe if you let me finish the fucking joke, saying all the shit I wanted to say, right? Yeah. I just started thinking like, all right, is that the reaction that you want from that joke? No.
Right. Not worth it, right?
Do you still want to tell a story? Yes. Then you need to tell a story that this story, the way a lesbian's going to hear it and not think that I'm a, is can hear it the way that I'm saying it and don't think that I'm like some Trump supporter, blah, 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 blah. And it ended up being a great bomb because like within 6 weeks of that, I remember being in LA and I did the same joke. And this lesbian came up to me afterwards and she goes, I felt like you were talking about my life. And I was just like, cause that's what I was going for. What it ended up becoming, it's a long story. I ended up meeting somebody on the film who was gay, and I was bitching about my wife one day, and she started bitching about her girlfriend, and it was the exact same conversation. I was like, holy shit. and then that became the in.
Right.
That became the in on the joke.
Right.
And then it became, rather than, you know, this straight guy saying this shit about this lesbian, we all became people dating women.
Right.
And the whole thing came together. So, yeah. So that's the thing, too, why, you know, during this whole time when, you know, people will film like a little clip and then be like, oh, you know, he said that and that means this and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, you know, like jokes are just constantly like a work in progress. Or even like, you know, I'm reading this book right now called The Code. Did you guys ever read that? It's a hockey book.
No, I don't think
so. This guy, I think it's Ross Bernstein, Joe Bartnick. I don't know if you guys had him on yet. Joe Bartnick from the Puck Off podcast, he gave it to me, and I finally got around to reading it. And they were talking about that Todd Bertuzzi hit. Right. And I remember when they showed it, and I was like, oh, man, oh, God, that's terrible and everything. And this book gets into all the soap opera that leads up to the moment and talks about how ESPN, all these people don't watch hockey, just watch the moment and go, it's a barbaric sport, blah, 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 blah. So it's really fascinating. It's a really fascinating book because I love the fights in hockey. But the more I read the book, I still find it fascinating that they haven't figured out a way to police the game without having the players police it. And I think that's part of not being a professional hockey player, because I'm just like, well, why don't you just punish people that do shit like that to a fucking level that they won't do it? But it's this is the best book I've ever read. It's called The Code, Ross Bernstein, as far as breaking down. I mean, I've watched hockey for 40 years. I didn't know a lot of this shit.
Yeah.
As far as how that whole thing works, all the fights from like switch the momentum to the you know, 6 games ago, soap opera stuff.
Right.
It's really, really fascinating.
How you holding up?
I got a book recommendation for you, Bill. It's Ice Time. It's a true story of the I think it's 99-2000 Methuen High School hockey team. It's awesome. Nice. It's like it's the writer gets embedded with the team and follows them through the Massachusetts High School state playoff games. It's fucking really, really sick. It's called Ice Time, A Tale of Fathers, Sons, and Hometown Heroes. It's a great hockey book.
I remember I used to watch my high school team, and we made it deep into the finals one time, and then we played a private school that just, you know, they had the number one draft picks from every friggin' town. Mm-hmm. It was stupid. It was kind of foreshadowing like Golden State or Miami or even the Celtics Big Three or some of those Kobe, Shaq, Phil Jackson teams where you're just like, is this really competition at this point? Just, everybody just jumps on one team.
Did you watch any of the Jordan doc?
Oh, yeah. What'd you think? And what I love about it is what a lot of documentarians and press people are criticizing, saying that, well, Jordan had final edit and blah, 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 and all that. It's like, well, finally, after like almost 40 years of you guys telling this story.
That's a great point.
I was blown away by two things. First of all, when his dad got murdered, I didn't know it was two 18-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Random shit. I didn't know that because I was watching the shit on the news and listening to all the scuttlebutt that, you know, this is, you know, is gambling debts and blah, blah, blah. Even a buddy of mine going like, dude, I was a degenerate gambler. He goes, it doesn't escalate.
Murder people.
Right. To that level.
Right. I have a friend who's a bookie right now and had like someone skate town on him for like $100,000. And I was like, so what do you do? He's like, what do you think I do? Nothing.
He just
don't get $100,000. Now, there probably are better bookies than him, but he's like, nothing. That kid just lives in Chicago now. Like, I'm never getting my money.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. He's going to do that again in Chicago unless he gets help, and eventually he's going to get the ass kicking he deserves. But the thing about it was the money. Like, I love that he cleared that up and how he really called the press out on their bullshit. And then what else I was blown away by was what an incredible teammate he was and how coachable he seemed to be and how, you know, when he fought Steve Kerr, Phil Jackson could still kick him out of practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy was making like $100 million selling sneakers and shit. And he's like, Michael, you're out of here. And then he's like, I felt bad. I felt like this big. I beat up the smallest guy in the team. And
he said going into it, you're all going to hate me and you're going to learn I was a tyrant. And it was like, all right, there was the Steve Kerr story. He shit all over Scott Burrell, and apparently he was mean to Will Perdue. Like that really seemed like it. I mean, maybe there was more they didn't talk about, but it was like, if that's all you're talking about, Michael, I think you're okay.
And in his first coach, I heard he ran his first coach out of town, and I found out he loved the guy.
Right.
So it's just like, I really think, though, there's a thing where, you know, for like athletes, like in acting, right? If you're the guy, like some of the stuff Pete, the shit that Pete got was, you know, I was joking with him. I was like, Pete, you can't be on SNL, be starring in a movie and banging all these models and famous people and not have people just hate you just because they want your life.
Right.
So I think with Jordan and guys like that, these sports writers, you know, they seem, I mean, the guy was like the coolest dude ever. I mean, he's before game one in the finals going like, hey, were you a little tense today? Nah, he goes, I drank a couple of beers, had a cigar and played the piano. I'm just sitting there going like, so the dude who guarded you that night is smelling your breath like you were just at a cookout, you reek of a cigar and you're dropping 39 on him. I mean, how fucking demoralizing that must have been. Yep. I already loved Michael Jordan. I already thought that he was the greatest of all time, and no one even came close, I felt. And having watched that documentary, to now see what kind of a teammate he was, how loose he was, and, you know, the whole time, you know, sitting there with that cigar and that little thing of scotch or whatever he had, and you knew at some point that was going to get lit up and all. I was just like, it made me, that's the thing, it made me miss doing stand-up, being back on stage, because I was like, while this is fresh in my mind, how contagious his drive was. Because I know a couple of people going like, yeah, that guy's like crazy, right? And I was like, no.
That's me. I don't want to do that, right?
Well, yeah. No, that's, or, I mean, nobody's that guy, but that, no, that's.
But you either have that, you either see that as like inspirational and you should be that way, or you see it as like, oh, that's weird. Like he's, you know, he's like on a whole other level. But I think it's like, I think it's admirable. I think everybody should be more like that, you know?
Yeah, it's why 99% of us don't have abs. We all want abs. Right. We can all do the work for 2-3 days and then we just fall off. Guys like him
never stop.
They just keep going. And it's just like, and it becomes a work ethic thing and it becomes part of your DNA. The more and more you do it, it's weird. You can actually train yourself to like achieve. It's nuts.
I think they say it takes, 30 days to form a habit. I've been working out a little bit during quarantine. A good amount, actually. I'm going to give myself some credit. I worked out a good amount.
Well, it might take you 60 days.
I bet it's been 3 months, right? If I stop working out after this, I'm going to be pissed. And I won't blame myself, but I'm going to be pissed at whoever told me it took 30 days for a habit.
Yeah, you always hear, it takes 6 weeks. There's all different kinds of numbers, but I found, you know, I wasted a lot of years of my career just being gloomy and morose and not understanding that I had the gifts. I just had to develop them. I was a decent writer and I could, you know, and now I've just been able to, once I got it going and saw a little bit of daylight, I just kept doing it.
Right.
And I always try to tell people, like, you know, because once you're there, it's like, well, shit, you just, you know, you're you. It's like, I wasn't, though.
Right.
I think more so.
Really bad.
Than in any other profession, I think comedians get that the most, where it's like, oh, this guy is selling at arenas. He's like, it's great. It's like, well, I suck for 30 years, and people don't think about that. Or not sucked, but, you know, grinding through it.
No, it's true. No, it's true. But there's also, like, I used to not know how to write a script. Mm-hmm. I always knew I was good at writing dialogue. And I just had this massive, like, I was scatterbrained, crazy scatterbrained. So what I learned was I need to partner up with people who are going to be more doing that. And then I'll just show up and then I'll be in it. And, you know, and then other things I've learned to delegate and all of that stuff. And all of that stuff are all of those things are learnable skills. I mean, you can look at Michael Jordan all day long. He can be like, oh, so you just run down the court and at the foul line, you leap into the air. I mean, you can't make yourself do that. But, like, right. You can get a lot out of what, I mean, watching that, taking what he did and applying it to whatever you want to achieve. I mean, even it's going to lead somewhere good is what I got out of it, which is why I plan on watching. I'm going to take a few weeks off of that documentary. And I'm going to go back again and just, you know, like that's going to be one of those ones I just keep going back and watching. Because, and I also thought too, that there was my buddy said, he goes, watching Jordan when he couldn't get past the Pistons and when he started working out.
Yeah.
Bulking up. He goes, I found in that moment, he goes, that is my disconnect with today's athlete. Because if Michael played today,
he would have joined the Pistons.
He would have joined the Pistons.
Right.
Exactly. And three other guys would have joined. Then they all would have walked around. And then once they won it, they would have started smoking Red Auerbach championships. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was like you wanted to beat those guys and you hated those guys.
But it's also hilarious that, like, Michael Jordan was like, I should probably start working out.
Yeah, like Mike, what if you were doing that your whole fucking career? You would have been a total freak.
Imagine. He was, but he wasn't bulking up. They said in the beginning how strong he was.
Right, right.
And explosive his game was. He was doing that, but he wanted to put some brawn on to handle what it was that those guys were doing. I loved when Isaiah threw the Celtics under the bus. I also enjoyed that immensely.
But that also wasn't true. They were kicked out. The Palace security made the Celtics leave.
Well, two things is funny about that. He didn't bring up the fact that publicly he said that if Larry wasn't white, he'd just be another player. He did say that he had already done that. Yep. Massive, massive disrespect. And then he said, you know, back then we didn't shake hands. That's not what we did. And it's like, okay, first of all, Jordan shook your hand both times. And you had no problem then. And then when they went to the clip of the Celtics, Kevin McHale's walking off the court and Isaiah runs over to him to shake his hand. So it's like, it kind of seems like you shake hands if you win.
Right.
It seems like,
but if you lose, you walk off the court. I got to give a shout out to Bill Laimbeer, though. Because they said to Bill Laimbeer, they go, do you regret not shaking hands with the Bulls? He's like, no, fuck those guys.
I know. He's the only guy who stuck to it. I saw an interview and he was just like, I don't give a fuck about this. And I was like, all right, let's go, Bill.
Yeah. And I hate Bill Laimbeer as a Celtics fan. I can't stand that guy.
Yeah.
And when I watched the 30 for 30 and he was going like, yeah, we tried to play a mind game with people. Like he was out there playing chess. It was like, right. Dude, you just waited for people to leave their feet and you tried to end their careers.
That's the mind game. I'm gonna.
That's not a mind game. That's just you were a fucking goon. But I will say this though, that motherfucker at the top of the key was money.
Yeah,
he was a good player. And for a guy 6'10", 6'11", to have that shot, dude, I'm talking nothing but net.
Yeah.
And I used to just
that whole team, like they were. Everybody talks about the Lakers, the Celtics, and then Jordan into the Lakers again. But it's like, there was a little dynasty right there with Isaiah and Bill and, like, a lot of good players.
A great team. They were John Sally, Joe Dumars,
yeah.
Vinnie Johnson.
I love John Sally being like, I'm going to shake these guys' hands. This is a bad idea. I don't know about you guys, but, like, I'm not going to fuck around with this. And it was like, oh, that was smart.
Who did that?
John Sally.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he was like, this is –
John Sally was another guy. Like, that was a great team. And I liked what's his face? Mahorn, I even liked. Mm-hmm. Laimbeer was dirty to me. Mahorn was just, he was more like an Oakley type of guy.
Right.
But like in the end of the day, though, you know, all these years later, it's like, I you know, I hated him then, but like, I love all of those guys now.
Well, especially like you said, compared to today's basketball, it's like, even if they were your rival, that's the game. That's the way you want to watch the game, you know?
Well, I feel like the kids today, I could say that, going to be 52 next month.
The youth.
They're missing out.
Yeah.
In a way, on the satisfaction of like finally beating that team. I mean, but the game has also changed tremendously. So who am I to say? This is just me as a fan would have loved to have seen Durant stay in Oklahoma after they blew a 3-1 lead, sit in the devastation of that in the offseason, you know, lift some weights like Jordan and then come back and then see this epic rematch.
Right.
Would have they have got him the next year? Would it have taken 3 years as opposed to him joining Golden State? And I always joke, like, him joining Golden State was like a bad, like, Hollywood summertime movie. Mm. You can guess the ending before it even happens. It's like, right. Well, you know, this is Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock on a bus. They're not going to die. They're going to figure it out, right?
Right,
right.
Not that that was a bad movie. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You know the hero's not going to die. It was just like, before it even started, you're like, oh, the Warriors are going to win the championship. And then they did. It was just like, yeah, it was very, I don't know. I kind of believe that you play sports for you watch sports for competition.
Mm-hmm. But the Bulls, they were a super team. It was informed.
I hate when people say that. They were a super team through draft picks and shrewd trades. That's different than like the top five guys all sitting on a yacht going, hey, let's all go to this team.
No, I agree with that, but it's just like there are three Hall of Famers on the team.
Hall of Famers on every fucking championship team.
It is different. I agree. You're right. It's a super team.
I hear people go, well, I mean, Dennis Rodman, they had one guy. Here's my thing. You get me a fucking superstar point guard right now who's going to win six championships with Luke Longley or Bill Cartwright back in the day when it was a big man's game, when you used to have to – when the big man on the other team could just stand in the paint. And they used to say back in the day you had to go into the trees. If you wanted to dunk, you had to be ferocious. Where you watch it now, neither guy, offense or defense, is allowed to be in the paint for more than half a second. Right. And because of Instagram, too – I feel like when a guy comes in for a dunk, the guy on defense is thinking like,
I don't want to be on a poster. Yeah.
I don't want to be on a poster. I don't want to be this on Instagram getting fucking dunked on. This guy's going to put his nuts in my face and fucking do a bunch of extra shit because he also knows it's going to be on Instagram.
Yeah.
I actually think that the NBA kind of has sold their soul to the super team, and it's become like wrestling where now I'm watching. It's like when Hulk Hogan would become the bad guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm just rooting against his band of brothers. And, you know.
The NBA definitely did that with the wrestling when they started having sponsorships. And it's smart. Don't get me wrong. You got to make money everywhere you can. But when they started having their, like, red carpet walks sponsored, that, like when you walk into, like, Lakers Arena, it's sponsored by, like, the Go Sneaker Company, I forget, or StockX or something like that. So, like, guys are dressing up to show up their outfits every single game for – Like it's the Oscars.
I mean, it's a build that's like it's a business they're trying to build and they're trying to get more people or whatever. That's what happened with football. If you look at the halftime show at the Super Bowl 40 years ago, it was like a local college band. It was played in the afternoon, and by looking at the halftime shows, you can see where the NFL felt they had reached the saturation point with sports fans, and then they started going after the casual fan. And then all of a sudden, you know, they had like REM and U2 and Prince and all of these guys playing the halftime shows. And there was, you know, all of this extra stuff. That, I mean, that's the only thing I feel like the NFL really got wrong, because I still love the sport. And I get now with the CTE, they got to penalize a lot of stuff. The thing that I felt that they got wrong is the Super Bowl became such a spectacle that it's the most important game of the year. And I feel like if you play in that game, half the battle is your opponent and the other half is trying to keep your adrenaline going during the 20-minute commercial breaks and the 50-minute fucking halftime show is what it seems like.
Have you ever been to one?
Yeah, I went to the Patriots versus the Packers when Brett Favre helmet off and ran in the Superdome. And then I went the first year with the Rams. Went with my brother and my dad. That was the greatest thing ever. We had upper deck on the upper side of where Vinatieri made the kick. And our whole section tackled each other. I remember being worried about my dad. And we couldn't believe it. Then I was like, every time the Patriots go, I'm going to go. But then the next time they played, I think they played the Panthers. And I was doing the next Monday early in the morning. I had to do the World Series of Dice for Chappelle's show. So I couldn't go. So I was really like, I mean, it was one of those things. I was psyched to do Chappelle's show, but I was like, fuck, man, I want to go. Some of my family went. But I do remember when the game was over and I still had $2,000 in my pocket and I didn't have to go to the airport. And I started thinking about it like, okay, I went when they lost and I felt that feeling. And then I went and saw their first championship, and I experienced it with my dad and my brother. It's not going to get better than that. So someday when I get married and have kids, you know, if I can steer them into being Patriot fans out here in LA, I'll take them then, you know.
Right.
And who knows now with Tom Brady leaving, We'll see. You know, what knows
when. What are your thoughts, Bill, on Billy Tom Brady, the Buccaneer?
I think it's a great move for him in the end, because it's just like he deferred a ton of money throughout the years. He was really beyond a team guy. And I think it was cool that the Patriots were like, all right, go out and see what you can get. And he showed what he could get. And I understand the business of it, where when a guy plays as long as Tom plays, you know, at some point, it's like the team wants him to retire as a Patriot. But like Tom is like a – no one's ever done what he's doing, like playing at the level that he's playing.
There's no blueprint for him.
Yeah, and I think that it was just one of those things where he was – who knows what, a season or two left. I don't think he can go through a rebuild. Mm-hmm. And he wants to get paid, go to a state where they don't have state tax. I mean, he did the Jordan thing for us, literally. We were a joke. We weren't a joke because we had Parcells, but before Parcells, we were a total joke. But he made us, helped make us legit. He won six. He had two three-peats, basically, you know, two dynasty things.
I said he gave us a seat at the table where it was like, there were my friends like growing up were like Yankee fans and stuff, and it would just always be like, shut up, Red Sox suck, Patriots really weren't even in the conversation. Like, there was no one good.
Oh, yeah,
in sports.
I would have thought the Red Sox would win a World Series before we won a Super Bowl. We used to play in like that college, like it looked like a high school football stadium in Texas, that dump of a stadium, and we were a joke. And we bottomed out. I mean, we had moments, we had great teams in like the mid 70s. Got fucked on that roughing the passer call in 75, 76 against the Raiders. And we had, got crushed by the Bears in 85. But we had some good teams in there. But by 90 and 91, we just – the Rod Rust area, we really bottomed out. Victor Kiam, the Zeke Mowat shit, it was really bad.
I have a picture of me and Victor Kiam. Victor Kiam's giving me $5,000 savings bond I won.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, here's something I've been actually digging into. I'm fascinated with NFL championships, basically before the Super Bowl. I'm fascinated with the fact that they don't count them. It's just the weirdest thing ever to me, because every other league, even as they absorb other leagues.
Yeah, they keep
teams,
all the.
They count Stanley Cups back to when it was the size of a shot glass. Yeah. They count they count World Series like 1880, 1885 or something. I don't even think they were using baseball gloves at that point. Like,
literally.
There was a year in the late 1800s where five guys hit over 400. I always mess with Yankee fans when they talk about Babe Ruth, that he was the greatest ever. I'm like, listen, that guy could play in any era, but he played in a beer league. Right. Those are beer league stats, okay? The fact that you could have a guy in the shape that he was in, he was built like Fred Flintstone, okay? He's eating hot dogs, he's banging hookers on a train, and he could show up in an MLB park on any given night and either throw you a no-hitter or hit five home runs. But Bo Jackson couldn't do that, looking how he looked. So they talk about the documentary about the fastball and how fast those guys were throwing. It's like, dude, the upper echelon of white guys back then could play any era. I'm not saying that. But they were going up against some guys like me who made the same thing.
You're going up against guys who have a day job. You know, it wasn't even like their full-time gig. It was like, I got to go from the factory to the ball field. I mean,
yeah, but that was a money thing. That was a money thing, because horse racing and boxing were bigger. But what I'm saying is, the big stat that I sway Yankee fans on, because I always say the guy could play any era, all right? But, like, he either would have been a pitcher or he would have been a hitter.
Right.
One or the other. You wouldn't have done both.
Right.
So is the hitting 400 thing. It's like, last guy to do it was Ted Williams in 1941, okay? Before him, 26 guys have done it.
Yeah.
1 year, five guys did it the same year. And when you watch it, it was happening, like, every year, multiple guys. Then all of a sudden it was happening every 2 years, then every three, then once every five, and then it just stopped. And if you look at after 1941, 47, Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier. And then all of a sudden, the Satchel Pages, Josh Gibson's, Pedro Martinez. They probably wouldn't even let Sandy Koufax play back then because he was Jewish. You know what I mean? It's just like, there is something to say about that. But anyway, so go back to these NFL titles. Like, the fact when they were talking like the greatest quarterback of all time with Tom Brady as he was playing, and they're talking Elway, they're talking Montana, the farthest back they would say was Johnny Unitas. And even then, no one would bring him up. But I'm reading up on like fucking Otto Graham. Mm-hmm. Otto Graham, okay, he played in the All-American Football Conference from 46 to 49 with Paul Brown, all right? And the 4 years that league existed, they won the championship every single year. Went undefeated 1 year, 15-0. So the NFL said it was an inferior league, and they absorbed the Colts, the 49ers, and the Browns. The Browns joined the NFL their first year. They won the NFL title. And they went to the championship game the first 6 years they were in the league. And they won 3 out of 6. And another amazing thing was Lou Groza. Their tackle was also their field goal kicker because no one took kicking seriously. He was the Vinatieri back then. He kicked the winning field goal in 1950, and he was the first guy that was deadly accurate from 40 yards or beyond and could hit a 50-yarder. And people were sitting there going, why the fuck are the Browns, this expansion team, kicking everybody's ass out here? And they started crunching numbers, and they realized the Browns had won 15% of their games because of Lou Groza. Wow. And then all of a sudden they were like, hey, man, these 3 points fucking add up.
Matter, yeah. And that was their tackle also?
Yeah, and he kicked straight on. And I used to think those guys that kick straight on could maybe kick a 25, 30-yarder. This guy could hit from 50 yards. And that was also when the goalpost was right on the goal line.
Right.
So when you got up to about the 42-yard line, you had to get 8 yards into the other team's side of the field, and all of a sudden they were a threat to score.
Right.
So in that 1950 title game, which you can watch the highlights, the Rams scored, and there was like a minute and a half left. And you can't believe how modern the offense. They were just throwing the ball, going down the field. And I saw this thing Otto Graham was talking about, going, he knew with our offense, we knew we could score. And Lou Groza, they asked him, were you nervous when you went up? He was like, no, I knew it was going through. And I was just like, this guy's Vinatieri.
Yeah.
1950. So the fact that they, for some reason, don't talk about that, you know, when the Buffalo Bills are the benchmark for losing the championship game, mm-hmm. 4 in a row, go back and look up, dude, the New York Football Giants, they lost the championship game in 58, 59, 61, 62, and 63.
Yikes.
5 out of 6 years. And everybody forgets it because it happened before Super Bowl III, which is weird to me.
Yeah, very weird. I got a very big kick out of the King of Staten Island scene where you guys are yelling about the Jets. As a Jets fan myself, it was primo. Very well done. Very well done, man. So that's out on June 12th. Also, new season of F is for Family on the same day, huh? It's a big day for you.
June 12th, season 4 comes out. Jonathan Banks joins the cast.
Awesome. How cool is that guy in real life? Because I fucking love all his work as an actor, but he seems like the man.
He is an absolute sweetheart. Yeah. He's like, he's a family man. Great advice, you know, for like, I remember when I first met him when I was on Breaking Bad and I was with my girlfriend at the time and I wanted to get married, but I was too chicken shit to do it. You know, he gave me some sage advice that helped me. Him and Paul Verzi helped me get over the hump on that one, which ended up being the greatest thing that I ever did. But he's like,
do you remember what that advice was, or echo that sentiment?
Yeah, but it was kind of a private conversation, so I'll leave it at that. But he's a tough guy, and he does take no shit. But he's a big hearted, he's a sweetheart of a guy, and just a fucking incredible actor. There's a couple of actors that I've worked with where, like, when they say action and then they look over you to talk, I get a jolt in my chest. Like, you know, when you lean back and almost fall back, mm-hmm. like how in it they are. You're like, you know, when he's talking, he was Jonathan. And then all of a sudden when he became Mike, you know, Mike's clipped some people.
Right, and right.
It's just like, fuck. So, yeah, he joins the cast, and, you know, we got, like, since we casted this thing, a number of the actors on this thing have gone on to win, like, Oscars. You know, Allison Janney, we got Sam Rockwell, Laura Dern, you know, she's always, you know, winning one of those. Every time I see an award, my wife watches the award shows, but every time there's that, I always see her accepting something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got a hell of a cast, and it's a Mike Price is the driving force behind it, and Dave Richardson, all the writers, all of those guys, Vince Vaughn, trying to give everybody a shout out, Peter Billingsley, Victoria Vaughn, all of those people that helped me out. There's a ton of people lifting, helping me push that rock up the hill.
Well, that's awesome. The movie's great. I know you just signed DeStefano and Giannis Pappas for All Things Comedy. So I know, I mean, business is good for you, Bill. You're doing big things. Congrats.
Yeah, no, those guys.
They are. Chris is one of the funniest guys I've ever met, man.
Yeah, and Giannis is like SNL level with the characters and all that type of stuff. So yeah. I am going to enjoy watching those guys. I think that they're gonna there's just so many different ways both of them can go.
Yeah.
And their show is really, it's a ton of fun to do. So yeah, we're very excited that they came over to All Things.
All right. Well, we appreciate it as always. Thanks for the time. Stay safe, yada yada, and let us know if you need anything. All right, man.
yeah, you can call me anytime, dude. I'm around too. We're all everybody's welcome. All right, guys. Thank you so much for saying those nice things about the movie. All right, we'll see you.
Yeah, thank you.
I've got some issues that nobody can see, and all of these emotions are pouring out of me. I bring them to the light in you. It's only right. This is the soundtrack to my life. The soundtrack to my life. 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 Yeah, uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh, yeah.